just lost to the guy who auto-drafted? Screaming at the TV again because someone who can't hear you dropped an open pass? Just dropped your RB1 for a kicker? Thought your fantasy draft was a good first date idea? You probably just blindsided by hunger. Luckily, Snickers is here to pick up your sorry butt off the turf. Get back on your game with NFL Hunger Bars from Snickers.
The Around the NFL podcast still doesn't have all their passports.
Welcome back to the Around the NFL podcast presented by New Era. I'm Greg Rosenthal.
In a room filled with some different heroes today, Mark Sessler, Chris Wesseling, and you just heard the voice of Patrick Claybon. Thanks for doing the ad read, Claybon.
It's an honor. I honestly, you were shuffling the papers around. I'm like, can I do an ad read? Greg, can I do one? And I'm like, I'm at the top right now. I can't get knocked off.
You'll have other opportunities. I mean, we are flush with ads now in these recent shows. I am not allowed to do an ad read, apparently. I was told by a shadowy league figure that this was this person's personal opinion, but they didn't like the job I did, so now I will not do it again. I refuse to do it again.
She didn't say that you couldn't ever
do it again. I didn't say it was a
she,
Greg. Let's not continue to drop evidence left and right.
Well, just trying to be gender neutral. Also, I apologize to
She
Chris
is
Wesseling.
Not gender neutral.
She or he. I apologize to Chris Wesseling for not giving you the room there to say, you know, hey, Dan. But Dan's not here, in case you didn't
That's
notice.
Quite all right. We don't have to do the same thing every time.
Yeah, Dan is across the country. I believe, you know, working hour after hour trying to get that passport. So I hope he goes. Maybe went to, like, the Washington, D.C. office and he gets
that
it
can
in
happen.
Time. We are 1 week away from being in London. Really just 5 days from leaving. I don't have you guys, like, done any preparation? Is there anything we're going to do for this?
Not a thing.
I got my passport. That's all I needed.
I got excited about you guys going.
Okay. That's more than we've done.
Because this has been a long road. And for those of us that aren't, you know, personally involved, I mean, I do care about you guys deeply. But just watching the whole thing materialize from what could have been in the past, it's great.
It's good to hear. Thank you.
And, yeah, we are working on it. We're flying out of here. We get to London next Sunday. We're taping three podcasts. We know that for sure next week in a few different locations. We're hoping to do one at a live location that we'll get you the details about on Tuesday night, London time. And then we've got the Piccadilly event on Saturday. I think that's it. And we didn't really do that.
It's a pretty jam-packed schedule.
And we didn't do that much this weekend because there was preseason football. We were kind of stuck working.
Jobs. We got jobs.
Yeah. Responsibilities.
Well, the good thing is the flights, I don't know about Greg's, but ours are, it's later in the day on Saturday. It's not one of these scenarios. Have you ever had this where it's like you wake up, I had this girlfriend telling you wake up at like 3 in the morning, the flights, you have to be at the airport at 5, no one's packed a thing because things were crazy the night before.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to be in that situation. I'm going to have my act together this time.
Now, you're a guy who prepares. You'll have stuff. You already were talking about packing like last week.
I'm just saying it's on my radar. It's a task coming up. Just like you have to move a couple weeks. It's like moving, packing, or they sit out there as annoying things, blocks of time that are going to take away from your time.
So the fact that we're going to London is a sign that the preseason is finally, thankfully, drawing to a close. The last meaningful preseason action happened over the weekend. It was less meaningful than usual. There weren't a lot of starters necessarily in a lot of these games. And coming off of that, instead of going over all the preseason stuff because we're sick of it, we're going to do something we do every year and go around the AFC in 48 minutes, which has kind of become one of Claybon's trademark shows.
It's that time of year for me to do around the one of the conferences in 48 minutes. So
and that means we're going to spend about 40 minutes on the Jets and 8 minutes on the other 15 teams in the AFC.
Every team. If you root for an AFC team, you're going to get talked about. And if you root for an NFC team, we'll talk about you later in the week. We tried to skip doing any news at all, but we had some big-time news drop into our laps on Monday. So for that, we're going to send it over to Emma VP sitting in the producer chair.
What's going
today.
On, guys?
What's happening?
I'm glad. Got to be back. Got to be the interim producer. It's an honor.
Let's do some news.
Hey, Ravens fans. Sit down!
Yeah. Mark, I think that's got to be a recurring sound drop there.
Yeah, I mean, that was from the heart.
Moving on to a little Odell Beckham news. The big surprise when we found out that Odell Beckham is signing a massive contract. on Monday, the biggest for a wide receiver in NFL history, I think was the lack of news leading up to it, the lack of kind of talk and drama and everything. It shouldn't be too surprising that Odell Beckham got a 5-year, $95 million extension. He's that great a player, $41 million in guaranteed money, $65 million in total guarantees.
What does that mean?
I don't even know what that means anymore, but I'll start with you then,
Wes. We should stop even reporting it. Like, what is the difference between guaranteed and total guaranteed? It just throws me for a loop every time.
I think guaranteed, fully guaranteed, means he's getting that money no matter what. And that other difference between 65 and 41 means that if he got injured and they wanted to get rid of him, they could get rid of him.
Well, then
so it's not a guarantee.
Take the word guarantee out of there.
I think it's probably demanded by the agents who are dealing with the insiders who report to us, and it keeps those little tent poles all raised.
So the extension averages about $20 million over the first 3 years, our insider Ian Rappaport reported. What were your thoughts, Wes, when you saw this?
He deserved to be the highest paid receiver in the NFL. Only three players in NFL history have caught more TD passes in their first 45 games. Randy Moss, Jerry Rice, and Rob Gronkowski. They're all among the inner circle of their positions all time. Gronk is already there. Odell Beckham, I mean, some of this is the era in which he plays inflates stats, but every time he takes the field, he's the most dynamic, athletic player on the field, and the production matches it. For a guy to start his career in that fashion, he deserves to get paid.
And it puts to bed, and I think this already was put to bed, but this happened at least now, and we have to deal with it down the road and keep hearing about it. But any whispers that the Giants were going to find a way to trade him or not have him on the roster long term, goodbye with that, because you can't let a player like this get out the building. You go get Saquon Barkley. You have Evan Engram. You've got Sterling Shepard. You have a nice offense here. You still have a quarterback issue, I think, obviously looming after this season.
I'm proud of all of us. I think the NFL community grew up during this. Mm. And, like, Takesman were kind of driving this conversation, like, oh, Odell's a problem. And everybody just kept falling for it, like, consistently, like, oh, are they going to trade Odell? Are they going to get rid of him? But then, like, at some point this summer, it's like everybody united to say, like, wait, this is dumb. This is one of the best players in football. They should sign him. And the Giants were like, yeah, we're going to sign him. And Odell's like, all right, I'm coming back. And then they signed him. And here we are.
I think the ACL, the ankle injury, rather, that he had last year may have helped us along just a little bit in that it got rid of McAdoo, which I think could not have hurt. It does seem like Pat Shurmur made a point to have a great relationship with Odell, to speak
absolutely
great about him from the minute that he got there. It seems like there's good mutual respect there. And who knows? Maybe it motivates Odell just a little bit more to sign that contract before he gets on the field again, just because you wouldn't want to risk getting hurt. And that trade stuff that popped up, it wasn't out of thin air. It was partly felt like pushed by the Giants a little bit. Dave Gettleman refused to say that he would be on the roster. And then more importantly, I remember Mike Garofalo reported at the time, the Giants thought like the whispers themselves were almost good for Odell. Like it was going to scare him straight or just make him realize he somehow wasn't untouchable. I don't know if I really buy that. It's kind of like the Steelers did that with Ben Roethlisberger back in the day, except Odell Beckham hadn't really done anything serious at all.
But this has to put to bed to some degree. I don't know why I keep using that phrase. I'm
Are you sleeping?
Apparently tired. I didn't sleep much on the pillow. So you can't have the Giants ownership talking about Odell Beckham and correcting him through the press and all this stuff. I mean, now he's your guy for the next 5 years and whatever the guaranteed money means. Like, that has to end. We need a peaceful chapter here. We'll see if that happens.
I think we'll get it. I mean, it's only 3 years, but he's on an early track of the type of players that end up in the Hall of Fame. They know that. This group, him, Shepard, and Engram, are going to outlast Eli Manning. They're going to be the bridge to that group, and it's one of the best groups in football.
And as you said, Greg, there's no ulterior motives needed anymore. Like, nobody's posturing for a contract.
Right.
So now it's like a married couple that they can finally have a conversation about the problems instead of, like,
one
posturing.
Other note, Emma.
Oh, wow.
This is just coming across the wire. And I know we didn't want to add a lot of fluff and extra news, but Raiders wide receiver Griff Whalen suffered turf toe in the third preseason game. We don't need to go that far into it, but it's just something to be noted as you assess the league.
Wait, but in the sense of breaking news, didn't that happen days ago?
Listen, we're learning this now.
We're learning it now.
It is an update. It is new information on Griff Whalen and
He's
the Raiders.
Important enough to get Ryan Switzer traded.
Yeah.
So
Thank
I applaud
you.
Your breaking
Thank
news.
You. Thank you, Wes.
Apparently, yeah.
What are they going to do now if they don't have either one of them?
Apparently, they have Dwayne Harris got to do some returns.
Oh, special teamer.
But, yeah, that's big news. I'm really glad we didn't add any fluff to the show. Thanks.
One last thing on Odell. I regret to inform you, Claybon, that one of your favorite phrases is now dead along with dress rehearsal. Get the bag is it's dead. Mm.
Who killed it?
All of the mainstream media reporting on Odell's deal today. It is now gone mainstream. I'm sorry.
How about like?
Well, also, we had the power on the show to ban phrases, and Wes just banned it from the studio.
How about like bag season, though?
Yeah.
Bag season's gone?
Look,
bag season
it depends
in my
on
house. We're all just trying to get that money, you know?
It depends on who's killing it.
And
like Wes says, if you know.
Beat writers are killing it.
If beat writers and Darren Revelle are just pounding secure the bag, then it's over. It's dead.
I would check Revelle's Twitter line today, and I bet he's got get the bag in there.
Revelle is the moment where, like, any trend or thing cool goes to die. And with that in mind.
Revelle's just out there getting the bag, though.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
He loves
capitalism.
With that in mind, I think that's it. I think we're ready to go around the AFC. And to start, I don't know if we have like an opening theme song or anything, Emma VP.
Definitely not.
Definitely not. That's something we would have had to prepare ahead of time.
Yep.
We are going to start in the AFC East with Mark Sessler. 3 minutes per team. You don't talk for 3 minutes. You did ask me that earlier today. He said he couldn't remember. I was like, really?
I had this bad memory of having to come up with like a 3 minute long soliloquy about like the Chiefs, but it must have been a wrong memory.
Mark was just like, I don't know if I have 3 minutes to talk about the Colts. Like, that's a
I
lot. I was like, no,
not.
I think that'd make for a bad show if we each took turns talking for 3 minutes.
That's
so here
relief.
We go. 3 minutes per team. We'll go through each division. We're starting in the AFC East with the Jets. Mark, let's go.
I will say one thing about the Jets. With Mike Maccagnan, I wonder if this has been a job-saving offseason, and I'll talk about one thing. I think he's done in a little bit of the mold of what you see some Super Bowl-winning GMs have done in the past. In the past couple years, he has gone out and found that game-changing defensive star in Leonard Williams. He found another one. I think when you want that strength up the middle on that side, they want to be strong on defense. You've got Jamal Adams and Marcus May at safety. I think Jamal Adams is going to be an absolute star in this league. So you got these two pieces. It's kind of like the way the Steelers were built when they had Troy Polamalu. And then now finally, after, you know, instead of going and getting the wrong quarterback last offseason, and Jets fans are elated that you have Sam Darnold, who you are not messing around with this narrative for the most part. You're going to start him week one. It kind of reminds me a little bit of like the Peyton Manning 1998 Colts season where the team may not do great in terms of wins and losses. Darnold may have some games where he really struggles, but they are all in, and I think that buys this coaching – or at least it should buy this coaching staff a little bit of time unless they find a coach they like after. But I like what Mike Maccagnan has done with the victories. He's obviously had some defeats that we pinged him on.
That's a good point. One of the ways to build a strong roster is not to miss on first-round draft picks, and you pointed to a strong record there. But also, give him so much credit for the ultra-aggressive move up for Sam Darnold. He didn't know he was getting Darnold, but to go all in like he did, and basically it was, if this works, you're going to save your job. If it doesn't work, you're going to be fired.
And since we last talked, you know, Darnold played again. Probably his most mixed performance of the preseason. Teddy Bridgewater looked good again, but it's very clear Darnold is going to get the start in week one. But watching that game, the Jets-Giants preseason game, it got me thinking that the quarterback issue has obscured everything else about the Jets, and kind of everyone's forgotten that this is not a good team. Like, they have absolutely no pass rush. If you look at the four people they're rotating for their four pass rush positions, that's only a minute. You could argue that those four guys wouldn't even make most teams. So they have a bad offensive line and no pass rush, which is a recipe to, like, lose a lot of games.
That's the trademark of the Jets. No outside pass rush whatsoever.
I mean, even going through Rex Ryan's career in New York, they didn't have that.
And they, you know, they ship a couple of guys off. Leonard Williams, people expect some things from him. He made a couple of plays in the preseason. Adams and May, something to feel good about in the secondary, perhaps.
There's plenty to feel good about. But, I mean, the receivers, I think the quarterbacks alone can carry you through the season. But if, like, they can get anyone for Teddy Bridgewater that can help their team this year, maybe do that.
I think they can wait till there's two teams that want Teddy Bridgewater.
As long as Sam Darnold is on the field, from the Jet fans that I've seen and spoken to, they feel great about everything. They're all in on Sam Darnold, and it doesn't matter if they lose every game. They love Sam.
That's easy to say now. When you're 0-7, you might be feeling
one. Time's up.
bozos.
Yes!
That was uncalled for.
Boom!
All right, go to the Miami Dolphins, Chris Wesseling.
That's not me.
Oh,
Patrick
Claybon. The Miami Dolphins. Here's the thing. After watching this most recent Miami Dolphins game and a couple of others in prep for the pod, Adam Gase has brought in quarterbacks that he's familiar with. He brought in Jay Cutler, David Fales comes in, Brock Osweiler as well.
Oof.
And the Dolphins still need a backup quarterback. And so this thing, if you guys will mind a turn of phrase, that's on my radar here is – maybe you just need to get some good football players and people that you have relationships with aren't necessarily the guys to back up your quarterback position. Like, I hope Ryan Tannehill is fine, but these guys combined this preseason are 39 of 68 with no touchdowns and three interceptions.
Well, and looking last year, they lost Ryan Tannehill, and another relationship, Adam Gase relationship subject, Jay Cutler came in. We did not need a year of Jay Cutler. Football year, at least. We need him potentially on that reality show for a couple minutes a week, but not the football side. Thank you.
Backup quarterback's a plague right now going around the league. I mean, there's a lot of good teams, Seahawks, Panthers, that have just Cowboys that just have terrible backup situations.
Well, and this is the Dolphins. The one thing I don't feel like that we've talked about this 100 times, the front office and coaching staff do not feel like one of the teams where they're intertwined with the same mind, and they decided, unlike the Jets, to not trade up, to not make a move to get a quarterback. When I think Adam Gase, he seemed to love Ryan Tannehill all offseason, but why not bring in someone to compete? Come on.
Well, I think that's a complex issue, and if you read, say, Bruce Arians' book, which came out last year, The Quarterback Whisperer, you know how important it is for the head coach to have a backup quarterback he can trust, and especially if you're a new coach installing a new offense. Say, like, Nagy brings in Chase Daniel to help out Mitch Trubisky. That makes sense to me, even though, as Claybon would say, he got the bag.
Right. That's Daniel. Your bad guy.
But to me, that makes all the sense in the world to bring in a guy who can help Mitch Trubisky because your hours with him as the head coach are limited. So that makes sense. But Brock Osweiler bringing in to help Tannehill, how does that work?
Brock might not even make the team, I think, based on what we've seen. It looks like it's probably fails.
I think this could easily be the second-best team in the AFC East. I really do. I think Kenyon Drake is going to be great at running back, and their defense is not star-studded, but there's some pieces there. It's not hard to be the second-best team in the AFC East either, so that's, you know, calling for the sky.
It's got to be a huge disappointment if they're not the second-best team in the East, because the Jets are in a full-blown rebuilding, and the Bills might have the worst roster in the conference.
I mean, I could see them being 8-8. I would not be shocked, the Dolphins.
Yeah, I hope Tannehill is fine. I know Adam Gase made a lot of changes in order to change the culture. But if Tannehill goes down again and they don't have anybody behind him, he may be the person out as somebody.
He's looked pretty good in the preseason.
He's looked fine. They have had questions, though. Their linebackers are terrible every year, and they have young ones this year, Raekwon McMillan, Jerome Baker, and they've really struggled in the preseason. Mike Gesicki, who they like as their first-round tight end, did nothing in the preseason. I need to see.
Did I stutter?
Wow.
Yeah.
Greg got about 12 questions in the last 10 seconds there. That was impressive.
That really shut me up, voice of Tam Posey. Now we will go to Chris Wesseling, who's got the New England Patriots.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we've already covered this. There's no reason for the Patriots to be concerned about winning the division. They do it every year regardless, and the division is even worse this year than normal. It is a down year for a down division. Having said that, The trade that looks like it could come back to haunt more than any other trade in the NFL this season is trading Brandon Cooks and drafting Isaiah Wynn. Through no fault of their own that Isaiah Wynn got injured, but this is a wide receiver core that has seen Kenny Britt, Eric Decker. Who else has walked
Eric
out the
Decker
door?
Is retired.
That's Malcolm Mitchell gone.
Yeah. Jordan Matthews
Jordan
gone.
Matthews
hey,
gone.
Man, that's Kenny, four you guys. Lost Kenny Britt.
Kenny Britt. Look, all these guys that they thought could play on the outside. Who's playing on the outside?
Philip Dorsett.
Chris Hogan once in a while. Philip Dorsett, who's a little undersized.
It's concerning in the Panthers preseason game where multiple tweets discussing how Philip Dorsett and Cordero Patterson seem to have a real role in this offense, and they bring this team
speed.
They're
2-3. They're 2-3. I think, to answer your question, Wes, on some level, there will be another veteran receiver who joins this team, because right now I only see three that are even going to make the team.
Okay, like, but
unless
like
it's Riley McCarron.
It's late August. You think you're getting a good veteran?
No, but someone like of this year's version of Philip Dorsett. But you're right, it's a weak
Philip
position.
Philip Dorsett, who really hurt the Patriots last year because he wasn't any good when they got him.
Is Brandon LaFell still available? Is he a guy you guys
bring? That makes sense.
Now you're cooking with gas.
Because
Super Bowl, here we come, baby.
Because I remember Brandon LaFell was asking for his release, and then all of a sudden Eric Decker gets signed by the Patriots, and I felt like that had to burn him.
I mean, Decker, by the way, great career, retired over the weekend.
I thought Edelman looked good against the Panthers. That they played a nice game, and they're going to get it back in week 4, which means they can also throw 50 to 60 passes a game to running backs.
Right. That's what
which
they'll
they will do.
And they have a second tight end in Jacob Hollister, who they really like, who I think is going to be a factor. But there's a part of me that's intrigued that Philip Dorsett and Cordarrelle Patterson have such big roles on this team, just like, wow, this is different. But you're right. It's a little bit of a concern.
T-minus 1 minute.
Well, it's going to be different than last year where Tom Brady held the ball a long time waiting for Brandon Cooks to get open downfield, and they went to more of a downfield passing attack. I think you'll see this year they go back to what he had been doing for the 5 years before that, a lot of quick hits right out of the shotgun.
I think they'll go back to, I don't even know when, a different Pats team than we've seen that's not a top five explosive offense and trying to win games in different ways.
Wait, they still have Brady and Gronk.
They still do, but like, maybe it's the running game. Maybe it's throwing the ball to the running backs. Maybe it's your leaning on your defense more. I don't know.
Probably all of the above.
Before we get out of here, you got to, like, Greg, as a Patriots fan, like this guy, Juwan Bentley. I think he played well against Carolina. He's a buzz candidate
at this point. Yeah, that's why I'm excited about this team. They have a lot of new players. Juwan Bentley looks good. Derek Rivers, who's a pass rusher, looked good. Dietrich Wise looks a lot better. You get Dante Hightower back. It's a nice little secondary. I like this Patriots team.
There we go. There we go.
I'm in.
We didn't even
hear it. What was that again?
Okay, we get it. You're nerds. Move on.
Thank you. So well said.
It's always Greg at the end. Did you notice that?
And it's always
we'll track that.
Correct. Now I can't speak for the rest of the show.
We will track that trend.
I'm going to talk about the old Buffalo Bills.
For 3 straight minutes.
For 3 straight minutes.
Do it.
On the quarterback situation, because Josh Allen over the weekend showed us in some ways what an uphill battle that any Bills quarterback is going to have. And they were without their left tackle, Deion Dawkins, who they like. But otherwise, they just got steamrolled by the Bengals. And it was a reminder, you have guys on the outside that aren't necessarily great receivers. Corey Coleman might not even make the team, reportedly. You have Kelvin Benjamin, who's an okay number one. You have no protection. And then how is Josh Allen going to respond to that? He couldn't do anything really over the weekend. I didn't take that much from that performance, but it just raised the question, what do? Do you go with Allen, or do you just kind of throw Nathan Peterman to the Wolves to get punished? Because it's not like he's going to do any better than Josh Allen.
No, I totally agree. But who cares if you ruin Nathan Peterman's career? No offense, Nathan Peterman, who has a
– he'll be all right.
He has a high upside as a long-term backup, but they traded up for Josh Allen for a reason.
Okay.
Because he's the one with the promising future.
But like, when is the offensive line and the team going to be any better? It's not like it's going to be great by week 4.
I changed my mind after this game, and it was just as much Josh Allen's comments as it was the interior of the offensive line, which gave him no chance. But his comments after the game about it being eye-opening, the speed of NFL defenses, and him, he held onto the ball too long.
He did.
He admitted that a lot of those plays were designed to be quick hitters, and he didn't see what he wanted to see before the snap. So that tells me just as much as the game film does, that Josh Allen doesn't feel like he's ready to beat a defense like the Bengals right now.
All of this is playing out so much like the positive and negative of his pre-draft scouting reports, where he's going to do some things, and he did it right out of the gate physically, that blow all of us away, and the potential is enticing, and you want to see him in there because he's the most exciting option of the three. But then suddenly, when you're putting a rookie, it's the speed. The speed is different when you're well protected. But then the speed is a whole different thing when you've got 5 or 6 giant men coming at you on every play, and you're doing figure eights going 10, 20, 15 yards behind the line of scrimmage.
I think one guy who is okay with all this is Sean McDermott, because if you're a quarterback that's coming in the National Football League, you want Sean McDermott, after seeing the way he feels about Nathan Peterman, like, get you a coach that loves you like Sean McDermott loves Nathan Peterman. Because I can't imagine a quarterback coming in under any other circumstance playing arguably the worst half of football a quarterback's ever played. A guy gets drafted to replace you, and still at this point in August, you're in position to start for the football team. This guy loves Nathan Peterman.
He does, but it should be pointed out, Peterman's thrown 80-plus percent with basically a perfect preseason, and he was going up against backups in this game, but he still came in and then played really well and moved the ball. So he's given him every reason.
Six, five.
Greg is trying not to be the last one to talk on
the
segment for the first time.
Wait, where's Dan? He'd have a better answer than that.
Wow.
See how I cut it off exactly at one there?
But would Dan read this ad read as well as I'm about to? Probably a lot.
Well, I don't know if you want to challenge him on that
no,
one.
No, probably a whole lot better. But I'm just here to tell you guys, the wait is over. Football's almost here, and that means it's FanDuel season. Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Fantasy football's back. You ever play a little FanDuel, Wes?
I've never played
Trick question. FanDuel. You're not allowed to.
Thank
it's
you.
A
yes.
gambling policy. We were sent an email today. We're not allowed to to.
But everyone else can.
Everyone else can. And even if you're not a fantasy expert, FanDuel is clearly the place to play. It's got something for everyone. You can do a free $250,000 Survivor contest this year. It's the biggest Survivor contest ever. You pick one team to win each week. It locks in. More importantly, week to week, you just get out there. You listen to the Around the NFL podcast. You glean some information, and you set your lineup. I know you'd be doing it, Mark.
I mean, if I were allowed, I took a 12-minute compliance course today, a video presentation put out by Roger Goodell in the NFL that made it very clear that I am not allowed to do that or bet on the ponies at any point during a work trip.
Your compliance is admirable.
It absolutely is, and I wish I didn't work in the NFL for this one reason, would be to just play.
Well, we can arrange
play
that,
some
Greg.
FanDuel.
You
and,
have been known to get the itch occasionally.
Destroy though. The competition.
I can arrange that.
To get into that free $250,000 Survivor contest, you just go to FanDuel.com/AroundTheNFL. Again, that's FanDuel.com/AroundTheNFL. When you do that, listeners, you help keep this podcast afloat. New users get a $20 bonus when they make their first deposit on FanDuel. That's like free money. Come play at FanDuel.com/AroundTheNFL. And now let's go to Mark, who's talking about the Cincinnati Bengals.
It's the Bengals. All right.
You
I was
ready?
Prepared for a completely different team, but here we go. Yes. Am I allowed to go? The time is already ticking. You know, I see the Bengals as a little bit of a pivot point team in the AFC, which I think is a weird conference this year, number one. This will sound unremarkable because it is, but I feel like this can be Marvin
Sell
Lewis's.
It,
well, I think this could be Marvin Lewis's third best team in Cincinnati. Now, that doesn't sound like much, except you have to look at the 2015
right.
team, which had Andy Dalton play at an MVP level, and the 2005 team.
All right, let's I'm calm just, down about MVP level, Andy Dalton.
Well, before
he was in the conversation.
He was in the conversation.
The conversation.
A lot of people in the conversation.
Stupid. It was stupid.
But still, I don't want to gush over the team too much, but I do think that Andy Dalton could be living his best life if he keeps up the high octane gaffes to a minimum. Are we buying this team?
I thought
we're
not
team?
Allowed to say best life.
I am. No one else is.
Okay.
But even I'm not going to say it more than once, but I really think the Bengals, when I was picking the playoff teams for our website today, I really struggled because I really wanted to put them in there, and it's hard to because there's – I don't know if you heard this. There's only six AFC playoff teams, but they've almost made the cut.
Well, I put them in there, and I took the old Steelers out just to mix it up. There's got to be one really good team, or there usually is one really good team that just falls flat. And I went with the Steelers, and I'm with you because I like the Bengals because of their pass rush. I think they can be balanced on both sides of the ball. We saw that in the Bills game. It was a reminder how many good pass rushers they have, not just Dunlap and Geno Atkins, but Jordan Willis and Carl Lawson and Andrew Billings. This nose tackle is looking better. It's like they got a lot of bodies.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch them this year for the sheer fact that they did not willingly enter the season with an offensive line that was in NFL caliber like they did last year. They just willingly went into the season knowing their offensive line was going to hold them back all year. And this year they at least attempted to fix it.
Minus 1 minute.
I think, to me, that's still the number one question, though. The offensive line, is it fixed? And with what injury to Cordy Glenn just demolished the whole thing?
Yeah, everything else seems like icing on the cake, as you said, Wes, after they went into the year last year with a plan of not having an offensive line.
Right.
That it seems like a goal that they want to accomplish. And I know I don't want to get too caught up in preseason highlights, but that's what I am. That's what brings the juice to me. And John Ross
getting
deep, shaking three guys to get in the end zone, I like it. I like the comeback
narrative.
You would have
needed to have been
that.
A kidnap victim not to see that highlight somewhere yesterday. And it was an amazing catch. And then what he did after the catch. And it tells you, because it's also been a one-dimensional offense where if you can shut down A.J. Green through the air, you're taking care of the Bengals probably in most of these seasons past. I don't think that's true right now. But I do think Joe Mixon, we need a little bit more in the regular season.
Well, if you watch the game, you also saw Tyler Eifert was back on the field. Mixon was lining up at wide receiver. Tyler Boyd was making plays. This offense is much different.
Please stop. Just stop.
Claybon.
This is sabotage.
Cleveland Browns.
The
You're
Cleveland
up next.
Browns. Everybody is dialed into this team because of Hard Knocks, but a guy who really hasn't made that much of an appearance on the show yet, but is unquestionably one of the best players on the field is Myles Garrett. After that last preseason game, he didn't have 25 snaps total in the game, but he got pressures on at least seven of Nick Foles' pass attempts, made him step up in the pocket, forced a fumble. I don't think it's crazy to say that he's a Defensive Player of the Year candidate.
Candidate? Absolutely. I agree with you.
He's not in the top one. I'm not saying it's going to happen. But
breaking news. Mark Sessler agrees with an optimistic take.
No, because you want to know what? It's the first time in like two decades where I saw a Browns player look dominant on defense. It's not happened. They haven't had that guy. Jameer Miller for one season.
Please.
20 years ago.
There's only so many guys that hold your eye on the defensive line every single snap that they're on the field. And now that guy plays for the Cleveland Browns. And I think that's a good thing.
That's exciting. I'm not saying he's J.J. Watt, but when you say hold your eye, that's the type of player who you're watching him every snap to see what kind of havoc he wreaks. And then on the other side of the ball, the best player on the offense hasn't even played yet, Josh Gordon. To me, he is far and away their best offensive player. Baker Mayfield, I love his future, but right now, Josh Gordon's a difference maker for them. I want to see him on the field.
It is Gordon, but I feel Gordon's almost like waiting for J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney to play together for 16 games. It is a mythical scenario where it is the most mysterious situation in the league always with Josh Gordon. Will he play 16 games?
Well, plus he immediately pulled his hamstring. And it's the same thing that happened to Roquan Smith. Everyone's excited when Roquan Smith returns. Everyone's excited when Josh Gordon returns. And then they immediately pull their hamstring. And it's like, it's not that easy to just come up, catch up with everyone. And I hope we see that Josh Gordon this year. But it's been a long time since we saw that for an entire season.
And I think they were just playing that safe. They said they said tightness.
Right. Maybe it's
so nothing. there wasn't an actual pull.
T-minus 1 minute.
But there's no reason. You shouldn't be ashamed. Like, I see the smile on your face. There's nothing wrong with being excited about the Cleveland
they've
Browns.
They've had a great month.
We'll see.
Mayfield looked good. Taylor looked good.
Whoa.
Joel Bitonio quietly moved over to left tackle, and like no one's really talking about that. That looks under situation. And Carlos Hyde, I think the fact that he just kind of blew Nick Chubb out of the water and looks good, and he's the starting running back. Like, I feel good about that.
I think Nick Chubb actually though has had some good tape along with some concerning plays, but they haven't been deep as a running back unit either. So
yeah, allow me to clarify. I'm excited about maybe three or four players on this team. And I'm the opposite of excited about this coaching staff, specifically the defensive coordinator, who thought he had to take shots at Denzel Ward and make his player's injury about himself.
That's true.
Six,
which is, you know what you're going to get from Greg.
Four,
you're going to get a lot of Greg.
Three,
from
two,
Greg. Yeah.
One.
It's bringing shame to the 60%
enough already. Next one.
I just couldn't time it. Wes, you're up with the Steelers.
Only seven times in the Super Bowl era has a team made the playoffs five consecutive years and then not gone on to the Super Bowl at some point. The Steelers are in danger of doing that because they're waiting for a dynasty to end in New England. And I want to know, is this the last ride of the Killer Bees? Are they going to miss their window because Lev Bell is gone after this year? I say just enjoy this offense one more time because who knows what it's going to be next year.
No Todd Haley there, which gives me faith in the Browns and maybe a little concern in the Steelers just because of the track record that he has. But I think you're right. The fact that James Conner's looked so great this preseason makes me feel even more confident that Lev Bell won't be there next year.
How are we pronouncing the offensive coordinator's name? Randy Fickner?
Yep.
Well, I did a little research on him.
Uh-oh.
When he was coach at Memphis, but way back when they had D'Angelo Williams at Memphis, he was most known for going up-tempo, no huddle, before a lot of other teams are doing it. Ben has been asking this, and you can get a lot of background on this in the excellent Football Outsiders Almanac, but Ben has been asking for this for years, and Todd Haley didn't want to do it because of his pre-snap motions and lining up under center and all of his trickery. And now I think we're going to see what Ben wanted, a lot of no huddle, a lot of up-tempo, which with their personnel should work pretty well.
I think he mentioned that that was in play, and there was a big period of time where when he was with Arians where Arians would let Roethlisberger call his own plays and organize the offense the way he wanted to, gave him a ton of freedom, and that was some of the best version of Ben Roethlisberger we've ever had. So maybe if we veer towards that, that would be successful.
And the relationship between Haley and Ben was always notably very bad, to the point where they needed an intermediary between the two,
which seems
like an odd position for an offensive coordinator and a quarterback to be in.
Probably good that he moved on.
But they made it work. I keep an eye on James Washington and what the Steelers have been able to do with receivers, especially rookie receivers coming in and making plays. They sneak up and grab this guy's had two touchdowns this preseason so far. They've been able to accomplish things the pre-Haley era, and I don't think the post-Haley era is going to be bad for them.
And they've had the same offensive line, I believe, for four straight years.
This would be the fourth year.
Heard of. And there is no reason that this offense shouldn't be the best in the league. My big question is the same one as ever. It's like I thought last year was the year their defense would finally kind of make the leap, and they did for a part of the season, but by the end it didn't matter, and I guess I've like lost faith that Mike Tomlin's defense is ever going to be like a difference maker. Even though there's some good players on it, it's just kind of there.
And
maybe that's good enough.
And
the
they say,
offense.
Oh, we'll find a way to mask over the loss of Ryan Shazier. But you simply cannot do that. And the minute he went out, that entire defense in that season was lost.
3, 2, 1.
Great point, Sessler.
Wow. Why did
see,
he get...
But see, I, what I try to do is I try to work with you, the production staff, by cutting my comment off right before your comment comes in. So that was an appropriate response by you. Thank you.
I've got the Baltimore Ravens up next. And my big thought is I've seen enough. I think they've had a terrific offseason, a terrific training camp. Not every team has a lot of things go right for them in training camp. I know there's a lot of optimism, but I think the Ravens really have. They've had almost no injuries whatsoever. They've did all their guys until Hayden Hurst have just been out there practicing every day. They got an extra week of work. They've got John
Brown. Willie Henry, starting defensive end, is injured.
That's right. John Brown John Brown has looked really good. I'm thinking of like these mid-August days where the Baltimore Sun kept saying over and over, it's crazy, but everyone is practicing. More importantly, they have a lot of young guys on the defense, and they're good at developing these young guys on the defense, and they seem to find them every year. This year, Tim Williams has been awesome in the preseason. Za'Darius Smith, Kamale Korea, who's been a second-round pick. They've kind of been waiting to come on. He's been coming on. And you just look at all these positions, and they just look deep. And I'm not buying the motivated Joe Flacco thing necessarily, but I am buying that Joe Flacco can play a lot better than he did the last 3 years, and that is an area that they can improve a lot is protection and their quarterback. And if they get okay quarterback play, they're going to the playoffs and they're going to be tough to deal with.
Well, I am buying like the beyond the motivation with Joe Flacco, man with awful back injury now does not have back injury.
Right, exactly.
He's moving better. You can
exactly.
tell he's moving better.
He's not – He's taken a lot of flack, but it's almost like it's gone too far the other way. He has played terribly, but if he's healthy, he's an average starting quarterback. He's not going to
kill them. Well, and outside of Steve Smith, they also put nothing around him for a long stretch. The John Brown thing, because I think like John Brown, who was with the Cardinals, was so fun to watch, and then he vanished for basically two seasons. Not the version of him that we knew. And I think it's great for him and for – you know, the AFC in general, if you get John Brown flipping from the NFC to AFC and making this Baltimore Ravens offense exciting after it has been tough to watch for a while.
Their backfield's deeper. Kenneth Dixon looks really good. Gus Edwards, an undrafted guy, looks like a keeper for them. Buck Allen's always good on passing downs. They're deeper than they've been than they were last year.
That means you have the Bengals and the Ravens as your wild card teams.
I have the Ravens winning the division.
Oh, okay,
the Bengals
right.
as a wild card.
And the Steelers, not winning the division and not making the playoffs.
With no logical basis behind it, just not making the playoffs. Just like because things, they're due. That's why I have the Ravens winning the division. They're kind of due, just
can
whatever.
Happen.
Yeah. You're stealing my go-get-my-lunch thing for this week.
Well, I didn't know that.
I guess I'm not going to reel you in.
The preseason for Flacco and the Raiders, as you said, Greg, is because I was all in on Lamar taking the job at some point, but now I just don't think there's enough losses for him to be able to get in there.
He played really well for anyone that watched.
That was his best game by far.
Nine. It was good to see him take a step forward.
Six. Five.
I'm not messing with
four,
Tim
Bosey
here.
Three. MLB. Two. One.
Ravens.
That one was brought to you by the broadcast. Carry on.
Was waiting for our broadcast plug of the show.
I mean, there have been about 12 of them so far.
Great,
so.
Great first episode. Check it out. Interviewing Colleen Wolfe. And another plug we're going to have is from our longtime sponsors for the last 3 or 4 weeks, ADT. Watch out. I've got a sign outside my house that has a little ADT scaring people away. ADT can design and install a smart home for you, just for you, backed by 24/7 protection. People think stuff doesn't happen in Santa Monica. Trust me, stuff has been happening right outside my window. There was a big time,
but not in your house.
Fight yesterday.
To ADT.
I'm not even joking.
Just mean streets,
Santa Monica. I'm not even joking.
Somebody on a bird scooter just
when
got
you
mad.
When you live across the parking lot from the Vons. Stuff is going to be happening. When you have ADT, though, you can explore the vast number of things you can do with your secure smart home. You can use game day service and ADT automation that unlocks the front door for friends who arrive at your place for the game or while you're out getting snacks. Or home run service, which lets you check in on your home's cameras even when you're far away. Not to mention, you can set up your home to automatically do things like lock the doors, set the thermostat when you leave. It's all controlled by the ADT app or the sound of your beautiful voice, or in my case, annoying voice. You got to go to ADT.com/smart to learn about how ADT can design and install a secure smart home just for you. That's ADT.com/smart. And Mark Sessler.
I like to lure burglars into my home like a Trojan horse, then trap them with something else. Anyways, where are we going, Greg?
Indianapolis Colts, Mark Sessler.
All right. I think they're intriguing because of Luck, and I thought Luck's game over the weekend was, after somewhat of a down performance the week before, another sign of encouragement. Came out of that with a little bit of a foot issue, but hopefully that's nothing. Here's my issue, though. Frank Reich spent last year with an Eagles team that was the third best rushing team in the league, and the number one team on defense against the run. The result, Super Bowl. And it's not that crazy. Why? But now you're on a team that looks like you have a backfield with no clear... Kristen Michael is riding through August as your lead dude with Marlon Mack injured. You got a bunch of guys there. Who's going to help Andrew Luck for once? And then you watch yesterday, Alfred Morris gashed this defense on the ground when most of the ones were in there. It's a formula for a long season that, again, puts a lot on Andrew Luck's shoulders.
I think it's the worst roster in the NFL. Yeah. I probably thought that back in April and May, and then, you know, you got started to get excited about Andrew Luck, and I am, but just the more – just on paper, and it's very hard to figure these things out, but when you just, like, look, is that position group above or below average? Is that position group above or below average? It's like – they're all below average, except for Andrew Luck. So that's problematic. Like, they put in a right tackle over the weekend, Austin Howard, who they gave a $1.3 million signing bonus to. He got Andrew Luck killed and got their running back killed in back-to-back plays, and they benched him. And he's supposedly not even going to make the team, Austin Howard, and they're just trying – they lose another guy to an injury in the second half. They just – it's just so many problems.
I don't mind being the sole vote. Voice of optimism here. We haven't seen them healthy. Like, let's see the backfield and the offensive line healthy, and then let's see what they do in September and October rather than in August. They're not good right now, but I think that's fair.
I guess my
on thing paper, is, I think they're fine.
On paper, the players are not productive or necessarily but seem that talented.
On paper, you have no idea who Naheem Hines is or Jordan Wilkins. Like, they could be really good players.
I know he's fumbled four times in two games, and he fumbled all throughout his college career on paper.
Not to why don't I hop on the positivity train with Wes? They get Malik Hooker back. He looked great at safety. Blew out his knee. He's back. Feels better. We'll have to see how he plays. Obviously, it takes at least a year to get back to where you were, but there's some positivity for concern on at least that part of the roster. But as you said, it's just
my bigger issue is just
roster.
More of the defense. I mean, I think you can probably cobble together a running back by committee, and someone may emerge. But there are legit – there's a lot of work for the front office to do with this defense.
Still. Eric Ebron looked good. I'm all in on an Eric Ebron, Jack Doyle. I guess they're over
I like Jack Doyle.
Above average at tight end. So there's one position. But they hired a defensive coordinator, Matt Eberflus, who's run a 4-3 his whole career. So they had to change the whole scheme for the second straight year. And it's like all these new plays.
3-2-1
Enough already.
Now we're scared of this this verbal lashing we get at the end of every segment.
I am totally afraid. Claybon, you are next up with the Texans.
So I was initially concerned about cornerback. I've watched A.J. Bouye have his success in Jacksonville and be one of the best cornerbacks in the league. And then I'm wondering what the plan is. So they bring in Honey Badger. They've moved Kareem Jackson to safety. It looks like what the plan is to kind of have a secondary of cornerbacks who play safety, but you're going to have multiple cornerbacks back there. Mm. And I believe in Romeo Crennel and where he had this team in position not too long ago against the Patriots team that won the Super Bowl. They were going to beat them with Brock Osweiler. It just they didn't get enough from the offense. And so I think it's Mike Vrabel's departure to Tennessee doesn't scare me at all. I think they got an upgrade at the defensive coordinator position. And as far as the plan to have Kevin Johnson, Aaron Colvin, those guys in the secondary, I'm interested to see how it plays out. And I'm not as skeptical of the cornerback group as I was previously.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. My question would be the top two on the depth chart. Jonathan Joseph noticeably losing a few steps last year. And then Kevin Johnson, who was just brutal last season. So he's got to bounce back. They signed Kayvon Webster over the weekend, who's coming off a major injury himself. Jonathan Batamosi, who's a special teamer, played well at times at cornerback for the Patriots last year. Wouldn't be surprised to me if those guys play more as the season goes along, and Jonathan Joseph and Kevin Johnson might not play as much.
Hmm. Kevin Johnson's a little banged up now, too. I mean, I'm interested in that week one matchup. I mean, Texans-Patriots, to me, is a cracker of a first guy. Because I'm just curious, what is Deshaun Watson going to really be like? Because they haven't really kind of, I think, shown what they're going to do with him in the preseason.
Well, and also, I mean, that's a situation where with Deshaun Watson behind an offensive line that concerns me deeply. And that can change a season very quickly for even a guy who looks like a comeback player of the year candidate. I mean, that's not going to happen. Last year they had a bad line, and you couldn't tell with him back there half the time. I mean, he was so able to elude pressure and get rid of the ball, but can you really do that for 16 games? This is a bad line.
They've had a lot of injuries. Will Fuller's been hurt in camp, just people in and out. This is the team I feel like – maybe it's just not getting covered that much. I feel like I have – the least amount of information of what's going on in Houston as any team.
But you said that you thought that they had one of the lowest floors and a high ceiling where you couldn't figure out where they would land, or you wouldn't be surprised by either. Has that changed at all?
No, because if Watt, Clowney, and Watson are all peak at their abilities, then this team can fly, right?
I think so,
Absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely.
I've seen too many good teams with a lot of potential just basically blocked from success by offensive line play.
Yep.
And, yeah, they feel better about it. They tried to address it. There's definitely different players there. It's Chantrell Henderson and Zach Fulton and Kalamate from the state.
So they all guys who were backups where they were.
6-5-4
It's bleak.
3-2-1
Now we're just listening to the
countdown. You guys are nerds. Next team.
Yeah, we did hear that one.
I mean,
before,
we are nerds.
Tampa, we'll see, but, let's move on to the Tennessee Titans and their number one fan, Chris Wessling.
Well, yeah, let me try to sell you guys on why the Titans are interesting this year.
Okay.
It's always good that you have to sell us on that. But
Dan's not here, by the way, so
yeah.
we're on board.
Nothing's interesting if you know what the outcome is going to be, and that was the Mike Mularkey era. You know they're going to run on first and second down. No team ran more on second down than the Tennessee Titans, which meant that their passing game and running game weren't married, because then you go into shotgun on third down and just force Mariota to make bailout plays because you didn't get what you needed on first and second down. Now they bring in Matt LaFleur, who's from the Kubiak Shanahan McVay school of outside zone rushing attack married to your play action passing game. And to me, this is going to be one of the biggest mysteries in the NFL. Can those young receivers develop? Can Mariota bounce back from last year's season? Have they fixed his mechanics, which devolved last year? And now you've got this married passing and running game with LaFleur calling the shots. Is he a guy who's you know, just a little bit below McVay and Shanahan, or has he been riding their coattails for the last couple of years? We'll see. But to me, this is an interesting – it's a mystery, and, you know, we don't know what the outcome's going
to
be.
It doesn't seem like it would bode well to adjust to a new offense in the same year that you want to fix your mechanics. And I think we've kind of seen not a great preseason from Marcus this time around. So that would be concerning. I mean, my beliefs regarding Mike Vrabel – I kind of expressed previously.
You don't sound extremely high on the whole concept.
He didn't earn the job?
I don't know. I'll wait. You know, we get to see the results. But, I'm not sold that he's going to come in and they're going to try harder and be better.
He's a little bit like Vance Joseph, which is that he got a coordinator job after the team he coordinated just had a terrible season. Because Joseph got it coming off a terrible Dolphins year, and Vrabel got it coming off a terrible Texans year. But I think they kind of like, you know, they like the cut of this man, Mike Vrabel's jib. They like the way he leads a room. You're not buying that?
Cut of his jib?
I guess he's got moxie and his boat looks good. With the cut of his jib? Is that what that means?
Yeah, but isn't like
– That's part of being a head coach, though, being able to
– Right. Having the charisma and the leadership and getting the buy-in from people around you matters when you're a head coach, I think less so than, like, what's your defensive scheme.
I'm curious how – like, Deion Lewis has looked good in the preseason, and to me he can be a huge difference maker on their offense. And they've said in practice that Corey Davis is really taking over as their true number one and is looking amazing, but it hasn't – You know, we haven't seen it. Like, it didn't happen in the preseason.
He'll
so I
pull
just want
something
to see
this
it.
Week.
I look at the roster on offense, and if the young receivers kind of all become what you want, they've got a really interesting offensive roster.
10,
By the
nine,
way, one thing.
Eight,
Erica calling.
Seven,
Erica is the
six,
girl version of a
five,
nerd. I'm just going to throw
four,
that out there.
I think that's a nerd.
Two,
a gal nerd.
One.
Well, it is.
I will literally pay you to stop talking.
I'm up with the Jacksonville Jaguars, who got bad news over the weekend when they lost Marquise Lee, their nominal number one receiver, certainly the highest paid guy in that receiver group, and was definitely going to start on that team. He's out for the season with a knee injury, and unfortunately, Patrick Claibon is out for the rest of this show with a news update. Claibon's leaving.
Gotta get this 2 p.m. update in.
Oh, right. My gosh.
All right.
We started a little late.
Thank you for the work that you've done.
Hey,
we appreciate it.
I love you guys. And you guys listening, too.
We will pick up the slack on your Broncos entry coming up.
I'm more worried about you were going to read the final ad read. I really blew it by saving you for the last one.
What would you like us to say about the Broncos?
They got a quarterback finally.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow. I don't know if I'm going to be able to muster that enthusiasm for Case Keenum. I definitely can't do it for Blake Bortles. And now that he lost one of his top receivers, it got me thinking about something you said, Wes, over the weekend, which is just, are they going the Rex Grossman route of wasting this Super Bowl window in the Super Bowl caliber defense?
This team is the best of the Lovie Smith Bears. It reminds me so much that you get so frustrated and pull your hair out that you want more for them at quarterback than they do. That they'll just settle for a guy. And I know that people think that I'm making it up about Blake Bortles' fragile psyche. I don't know if Blake Bortles' psyche is fragile, but everything the team does and says tells you that it is. They design their game plans to hide him. They don't go and get competition in the offseason to hide him. Like, why is he so afraid of competition, or why do you think he can't take the competition?
I'd like to often just wipe away preseason quarterback play and say everyone just gets a clean slate, but the history of Blake Bortles combined with what we've seen over the last 3 or 4 weeks does create a concerning mixture of worries about this team. And I would like to think that if they do realize how fragile Super Bowl windows are, how quickly they close, that if you really are serious, that maybe the Teddy Bridgewater thing makes some sense. I don't know why it would not. I don't know what it would cost you. But what's the cost of not doing something and turning into the AFC hangover team where it's hard. It's going to be hard to top what they did last year. They overshot anyone's expectations, and now you have to get basically back to the AFC Championship and win it to top what you did last year. I don't see that as an easy course at all for them. They still have a ton of talent on defense.
And they stayed healthy on defense last year. That's not guaranteed to happen this year.
The argument for them is that in key spots, they're a young team. I mean, Keelan Cole's probably their number one receiver now, an undrafted guy from a year ago. They're going to have to count on Dante Moncrief to play more. But they're young at receiver with Dede Westbrook. They're expecting Miles Jack, who's now at middle linebacker, to really take a next step. And that's like a crazy fun linebacker duo with him and Telvin Smith. You're thinking Ngakoue can get better. Certainly Jalen Ramsey maybe and Bouye have another, or at least Ramsey has another level to go. And it's like, there's a lot of young players who can just get better.
Yeah, but who are you trying to convince? Like, this is the talk. This is the problem with talking about the Jaguars, because everybody agrees they're loaded with talent. They just have a quarterback problem.
2-1.
Ugh. I wish I was listening to the broadcast right now.
Wow, another one. I mean, one felt like enough. Mark, you're up with the Raiders.
All right, the Raiders. Well, look, I have one negative and one positive, okay? Here's my thing with them is I think the Khalil Mack situation, it's interesting because in the same state, you have the Aaron Donald thing going on with the Rams. But the one thing with the Rams is you feel like there's, on both sides, communication. There's this desire to get it done, and it's not surprising that it's going to go in right before week one, but it will get done. That's just my feeling, and we'll see if we're right. But with Khalil Mack, there's just been this odd silence. There's no communication. Gruden's not reaching out to him. And it just reminds you of a team that traded for Ryan Switzer, for instance, 121 days ago, and now is trading him again today, that there's just a bit of discombobulation between, I think, again, the front office and coaching staff. And it may sound like we're beating a dead horse at this point, but that doesn't work in the NFL. That creates, at some point, a forced adjustment to take a step back. And I think if you want to look at the positives for them, I would say that I look at their backfield depth with Marshawn Lynch looking the way he does. With Doug Martin, we'll see what we get from Doug Martin. But Chris's boy, Chris Warren, you got him as a deep backup. You got Jalen Richard, DeAndre Washington. That's a Gruden-type backfield where he can hit people with the run and do what he wants. And I love Arden Key so far, has been really good on tape. And so that's someone that you hit on in this discombobulated front office. Whoever's making this draft picks, I don't know. The Raiders will, though, be fascinating. I was really annoyed with them a couple months ago. I now find them fascinating and cannot wait to see what happens because there is a high risk, high reward situation going on here with Gruden.
Love that Monday night final game of week one, Rams Raiders as the late night Monday night game, which sometimes is a stinker. That's a good one.
Yes, but it is.
You raised some good points on Khalil Mack. It's just bizarre, the lack of communication in contrast to, say, Odell Beckham and Aaron Donald. And maybe they're just waiting for Aaron Donald's contract to set the market, and then things will fall into place. But it does seem like they're so far off that they're not even talking. And maybe Arden Key's emergence isn't really helping Khalil Mack in there.
There's a report, you know, from Pro Football Talk that they're not shooting down trade offers, which I don't know what that means exactly, that there's four teams that are significantly interested. The Jets were one of those teams, according to the New York Daily News. I haven't really bought that until this point, but now that they're almost putting it out there that, like, we'd listen, it makes you wonder.
Or if you just know that Khalil Mack's simply not going to play for you.
Or that you're not willing to give him the biggest defensive contract in history, because that's what it's going to take.
If Aaron Donald's getting $22 million a year, that's more than a lot of entrenched franchise quarterbacks are making.
The thing is, though, Mack, it seems worth it. Like, I don't really get the argument around not paying him. But we've been so down on a lot of things with Gruden. Arden Key look good, but Maurice Hurst and P.J. Hall. They have three rookie defensive linemen who have looked good in the preseason. That's something to get excited about.
Time's up, bozos.
All right, we're going to move on to what would have been Claybon's team. I didn't know we could have been short on time with him. Oh, my gosh, he's back!
I want it! I want to talk about Case Keenum.
This is amazing. Literally, as we're getting to the Broncos, he runs back up here. That was like a WWE-style Ultimate Warrior jumping into the ring.
I heard it. I heard you mention it. We were walking out, and I'm thinking, I have tweeted way too much that wasn't effusive praise of Case Keenum, and then I watched this preseason, guys.
Wow.
And then I was touched.
Really?
I was touched with Case. Well, I saw him throw a ball to Courtland Sutton, and Sutton went up and grabbed it.
The one on Josh Norman?
Yeah.
Down the sideline?
That was it.
Yeah.
I'm sold.
That was a pretty play.
I was not high enough on Case, but now I am making it. I am making the case for our dude.
He made that same throw to Adam Thielen over and over again last year.
But it seemed like the circumstances, I wasn't ready. But, guys, I am ready now.
This seems big.
Do you have like a Broncos history?
I'm loving like this. It seems like you're looking for a new team. I know his history.
I'm just out of breath.
No, you're just out of breath. You're done talking.
No.
They're got to be more fun to watch, though, with Case and Cortland Sutton and these rookies.
Philip Lindsay, my guy, undrafted free agent. He's going to make this backfield.
You like Royce Freeman?
Royce Freeman, Cortland Sutton, Bradley Chubb, Josie Jewell.
They added Pac-Man to the mix, which I honestly think is a great signing because this team was as thin at cornerback, even though they have those two at the top, as any team in the league. And Pac-Man Jones has basically never not been a solid player. Whether he's a knucklehead or not, he's always good. He's ageless. More Pac-Man Jones than I expected to talk.
I think Bradley Chubb has looked really good. I mean, it's like, again, these teams, it's an obvious pick, but they picked him, and he's going to be great for them. And him and Von Miller together it's one of the scariest two-man pass rushing combos you could imagine. Wouldn't want to be playing against that.
Emmanuel Sanders looked rejuvenated, too. He had a disappointing last year fighting through injuries, but he looked like 2015 Emmanuel Sanders in the last game.
It's always kind of overlooked, like when you're going into season, like veteran players that can just play better.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like he can play better. Von Miller, now he maybe can't play that much better. He's pretty basically been at that level. But maybe he can get back even to the slightly higher defensive player of the year level that he was at the year before.
T-minus and it felt like kind of dumping out of Aqib Talib and not getting that crazy that much in response. Now I know Talib's a little bit older, but bringing in Pac-Man makes you feel better about that. In hindsight, that they're able to get somebody who can contribute. And I can just add more Pac-Man Jones discussion to this podcast in 2018.
There you go. I mean, and then one other thing to your Keenan point, like the turnovers from the quarterbacks last year killed this defense and where they happen on the field. And it's like, if Keenan does not need to be as statistically perfect as he was last year, he simply won't be. But if he doesn't turn the ball over, they're a different type of team. I still don't view the Broncos as a typically scary entry in a weird AFC.
I like this division, though. I'm signing up. I would watch all these division games all year.
I think they're interesting this year.
I'm intrigued.
The Broncos really intrigue me, but this is another team where the offensive line could ruin everything.
Mm. Are you? Did you get your breath back, Claybon?
I'm back.
Were you literally running up the stairs and through the building?
I sprinted up the stairs past, because there's always those waves of people that you have no idea even work here. It's like, excuse me. Yeah, I'm a sweaty guy.
Enough already. Next one.
I got a question for you guys before we get to the next division.
Okay.
Have you ever made pastrami at home?
No.
Never.
Never. Nor
How
will
about
I.
smoked salmon?
Yes.
Negative.
No.
Slab bacon?
I mean, I bought it.
You get a nice duck confit?
Love duck.
Been down that topic before.
Underrated.
It's easy to make all that and more right at home with Jewel Sous Vide. Jewel makes it easy to try cooking new recipes and cuts of meat at home because there's zero guesswork and food is never, never overcooked or undercooked. Jewel heats food to the exact right temperature and holds it there. Beef, poultry, pork, seafood, veggies, desserts. You want your ice cream at a certain temperature? We got that for you. Everything comes out exactly the way you like it. It makes a great companion to your grill or smoker. It separates the cooking step from the finishing step so meats come out perfectly tender and juicy on the inside and get that charred, crispy bark on the outside. And it's easy to prepare. New recipes for a crowd. If it fits in a large cooler, then you can cook it with Jewel. To get yours, visit chefsteps.com/Jewel and use code AROUND to get $15 off for a limited time. That's chefsteps.com/Jewel, code AROUND. Jewel, perfect food.
It only costs $16, so $15 off is a steal.
That's a professional ad read right there.
Nicely done.
That's for sure. Let's go to Los Angeles Chargers and Chris Wessling.
We were talking about how much you, Greg, want to watch this division last year because so much is up in the air. What's going on here is the Chargers have caught the entire division in a rebuild. The Broncos are rebuilding from their last quarterbacks. The Chiefs turned it over to Patrick Mahomes and have, as Greg said in his latest column, maybe the least impressive unit in the league, the Chiefs defense this year.
We'll talk about stealing thunder that they're coming up next.
Well, we'll have plenty of time to go over that. And the Raiders, who knows what John Gruden's going to be? It's time for the Chargers to quit squandering opportunities and using injuries as a convenient scapegoat. When you are blowing games with poor special teams, this team was among the top 10 offenses and defenses, and they were 31st in special teams. When you are, along with the Steelers, the worst tackling team in the NFL. That the middle of your defense between Bosa and Ingram is a freeway. just broken tackles all along. So if you got three rookies, you might start on defense. Uchenna Nwosu, Kaiser White, Kevin White's brother, and Derwin James. This team could add a lot more speed. You've also got Justin Jones, another rookie on the defensive line. I want to see them tackle better and make field goals and do special teams because these are all things which coaching should help.
Derwin James is my defensive rookie of the year pick.
Like it.
And J.J. Jones is going to help their special teams a lot. That dude is fun.
And I don't know if I was totally sold, but when I found out that Kazir White is Kevin White's brother, now I'm in. I didn't know. Fourth round pick, and it looks like he's going to start. They really like him, so that's huge. On paper, it's a dominant defense. Like, my question with them is, like, can Gus Bradley – I don't know. I almost am having just a hard time imagining, like, a top three Los Angeles Chargers defense. But it seems like it can happen. They've got the players for it.
And there's some injury concern with Bosa, but Anthony Lynn did say over the weekend if it was a regular season game, Bosa would have played. They just weren't going to waste him in a preseason game. So, look, things could go wrong, but why not?
Yeah, pretty soon Bosa's going to want to break the bank. Phillip Rivers is going to be old, and you missed your window.
He is old. He hasn't really shown it.
But he's still, like, he's throwing from different platforms. He's evading pressure. Like, he's looked good in the preseason.
Yeah, he hasn't shown it. Yeah, but he's the same age as, you know, Roethlisberger and Eli. And to me, he's the number one story on the board. If you're just rooting for an NFL story of just, like, someone I'd like to see in the Super Bowl, Phillip Rivers is, like, my number one pick.
And then at the same time, and it's unrelated to the roster, which is better than any other in the division, is the environment they play in, which is a stadium that's going to be all season long half-filled with the opposing fan base. And it's hard to imagine them, you know, hosting an AFC championship game in a stadium half filled with the other team's fans.
Or it would be great and crazy. Weird.
Please stop. Just stop.
We will after this final team, the Kansas City Chiefs. And Chris kind of said it for me that the most concerning unit on either side of the ball that I saw in all of the preseason was the Kansas City Chiefs defense, which was quite bad last year, made a lot of changes, and then in all 3 weeks when the Chiefs starting defense was out there, got run over. It really didn't matter who they were going against, whether it was Chase Daniel going for three straight touchdowns. I mean, when the Bears' backups are going for three straight touchdowns on you, maybe I shouldn't overreact to the preseason, but it's not like the personnel really makes you feel any better. The secondary without Eric Berry, and right now they are without Eric Berry. He hasn't practiced in 2 weeks. He's coming off a torn Achilles tendon, and his heel, which is the same area, is hurt again, is one of the weakest secondaries in the league. And then you're going to need a really strong front seven to make up for it. I don't know if they have that. And it's just asking a lot of Patrick Mahomes to try to win 33-30 every week. And that might be what it takes.
It's almost like if they had an all-pro cornerback on the team, they should have kept him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's a hard one to figure. I guess they just didn't want to pay him or something.
They didn't want to commit to him.
Eventually, but they didn't have to pay him. That was the part I didn't get. He was under contract. Maybe, you know, this year you could have tagged him next year.
Might have been the personality. I mean, sure. They seemed to tire of him. I am encouraged by Patrick Mahomes, right? It was one of these quarterbacks that amid this sea of rookie quarterbacks, it's almost easy to forget about Mahomes and Trubisky and these guys that are, you know, in year two. And Mahomes in that last game, I mean, you feel like he can be the engine behind an exciting offense. And if they aren't, then that team could free fall because they are going to have to score. They're going to have to use Tyreek Hill, and they're going to have to use Kelsey and score probably 27 points a game, if not more, to get above 500.
Well, here's the thing. Tyreek Hill said after this game, like, he thinks it can be the number one offense in the league. And I thought, I mean, that's not that crazy either.
They might have to be.
But,
right.
But you will need to
right,
be
but
also.
Maybe, that's what I mean. When I'm saying they're going to have to win 30-27, yeah. Maybe they can. I mean, maybe it's not too crazy to think that they're a top two or three offense.
When the season is grinding you down, Mark, in December.
Try October.
In October. Just thank God that your job does not involve trying to cover Tyreek Hill. That's got to be one of the toughest jobs in sports.
Yeah, I would not want that at all.
I would love to see that. You played a little cornerback, didn't you?
I mean, I couldn't. It was simply like this person's like height and weight combination don't fit anywhere, but we have like 18 people playing cornerback.
What would your strategy be with Tyreek Hill? You try to get him up in the line, try to back off a
little bit? I'd start like 50 yards deep and then like Here's the problem, though.
They called for help.
Yeah, there's no strategy.
The Cowboys tried that. That didn't. Wasn't
yeah,
that him?
No strategy.
End of the half? Yeah.
That didn't work. I mean, they, even their depth is good. Like, DeMarcus Robinson, I like. Chris Conley. Like, they've got just people falling out of the woodwork. Their backup tight ends are kind of fun. Usually, like, they can – I love Andy Reid. Put Andy Reid in the Hall of Fame someday.
And
we're way off topic.
He gets him a chance to try something different with somebody new at quarterback. But, you know, if we're watching Orlando Scandrick get dusted by 10, Kevin White for 9, his first touchdown. 8, it's like maybe he's not 7, a quote-unquote problem 6, in the locker room like 5, Marcus Peters was, 4,
but
he's,
yeah.
he's 3, getting dusted for touchdowns. 2, so that 1. Sucks too.
Stop. Did I stutter?
You did not.
And you got your wish, bro.
You did a great job, Emma VP.
Thank you.
And Tamposi, who's not here, but it felt like she was here.
He did.
I wonder why.
On those sound drops. And guess what? They'll be back. You can, you know, leave them in the system
yeah.
or create some new ones for later in the week. We're going to do around the NFC. We're going to look ahead, of course, to the 2018 season. We have shows Wednesday and Friday before we head overseas. And I think that's it. We got through all of our ad reads and all 16 teams. And for your final thoughts, I leave it to Chris Wessling.
See you on Wednesday.
I just wanted to totally put one of you on the spot. All right. For Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Patrick Claibon, Dan Hansis will be back next time. MVP behind the glass. See you Wednesday.